So, Dr. Clayton, with regard to flibanserin or ADDI, there are a couple of small barriers that we might have to encounter. Like, you know, the FDA requires us to complete a special training called the REMS, and there's concern about use of alcohol and flibanserin. Can you just help us, like, how difficult is it to overcome these barriers?
So the dose for flibanserin is 100 milligrams at bedtime daily.
Okay.
And flibanserin works as a 5-HT1A postsynaptic agonist and a 5-HT2A antagonist. So it's a central nervous system acting drug, and some of those effects occur separately in drugs that we have available now.
Yeah.
So the most common side effects are what you would expect: dizziness, sedation, and nausea. If you take it at bedtime, it actually helps people sleep better.
Sedating.
And there's a cognitive study for next day cognition and driving that demonstrated that. And
that there was no impairment in driving?
No, it was actually better than placebo.
Better than placebo. Okay.
Better.
They had because
than
they
placebo.
Had perhaps because they had good
better
sleep.
Better sleep. And it was also compared to a approved hypnotic in Canada, and it was both placebo and flibanserin were superior in terms of cognition. So cognitive studies were done, and in terms of driving, staying in your lane the next morning after dosing. And that was even true when they doubled the dose of flibanserin the night before.
Okay. So the sedation is not a bad thing. Sedation seems to be helpful. But
right.
They should make sure, I guess they should make sure they take it after they've had sex and not before.
Right.
That would not be good.
Just like you might pills that you take to help you sleep.
Yeah.
And the nausea and dizziness, you tend to sleep through that because
okay. Yeah.
It's you're taking it at bedtime. So the FDA required this cognition and driving study, and it was really quite positive for flibanserin. They also required an alcohol, and it was an excessive alcohol use study, where people had to drink the equivalent of half a bottle of wine or a whole bottle of wine in grain alcohol equivalents in 10 minutes at 10 a.m. on an empty stomach.
What?
And then,
at 10 a.m.?
Yes, at 10 a.m.
Do they get this? Is the wine supplied free in these studies?
Yes. Well, it's not wine. It's an equivalent
to
that.
Oh, grain alcohol.
And grain alcohol, like mixed with orange juice.
I wonder who volunteers for these studies. Yeah.
Well, that was part of the problem, because flibanserin was being looked at for use in women, and men were who were willing to do that.
To do that, yeah.
And they still were impacted. There were
yeah.
people who felt like they were going to pass out. And the FDA called that hypotension syncope. And so they've put a REMS warning, a contraindication, and a REMS
yeah.
on flibanserin for women, even though most of these subjects were men, and it requires that you provide informed consent to the patient that they should not drink alcohol while taking flibanserin.
At all, that's the recommendation.
That is the recommendation.
Is that they should have no alcohol when they're taking flibanserin.
Correct.
Is the step, okay. We don't need a written consent, right? It's a verbal.
Well, it's useful to, there's something you can print out, and we do try to do that. The pharmacy where they go to get it filled will also do that and say, you know, you can't drink alcohol with this.
Right, okay.
And instruct them. And you can learn this and take the test at addirems.com. So addirems.com.
So those of our readers who want to prescribe or at least have the option of prescribing flibanserin, how long would it take them to go to this website, do the training? Do you have a sense for like how
yeah.
long it would take?
My residents say it just takes them a few minutes. So if you're younger, it probably takes you less time
okay.
because you're fast out with it. And there are four test questions at the end.
So it may be a few minutes or 15, 20 minutes at the most.
Right.
And
oh,
you
yeah,
do that
yeah.
only once.
Right. Only once.
And you're now authorized to use flibanserin if you encounter an appropriate patient.
That's right. One of the questions that doesn't really get answered in the sort of training that you read through
yeah.
is that you need to provide informed consent like this to the patient every time you prescribe it.
Okay. So every time a new prescription is written, you have them sign a form saying they understand that they can't take alcohol with the medication.
Or document that in some way. Yeah.
Or document that in some way. So it's not necessary to have them sign a form every time.
It's not clear.
It's not clear.
So I think, I'm not sure it makes sense. So we don't have them sign it every single time. But we say every time. But I also provide them with some other information. Because you know patients do what they want to do a lot of times. So our patients adjust their medications.
Really? I've never heard of such a thing.
Yes. And, you know, including stopping taking their medications or upping them. Or a variety of things, and there's no increase to flibanserin. It's 100 milligrams is the appropriate
dose. That's
fixed
easy
dose.
Dosing.
But this issue of can you have ever anything to drink, I think is less definitive than FDA has said and in the REMS. So subsequent to the approval, or actually at the approval is when there was a discussion about the REMS, and the FDA required 3 additional studies be done looking at alcohol. And one of those has been completed in 100 women, dosed 2 drinks or 4 drinks, but they are based on jiggers, not by weight, whereas the previous study was based on weight. So if you weighed more, you got more alcohol.
Right.
And they found really very safe. It was very safe.
So in the follow-up study where it was women and the amount of alcohol was reasonable, 2 to 4 drinks, but nobody passed out or had a hypotensive episode.
Right.
Okay.
There was some dizziness.
So there's somewhat reassuring just in case. We are not encouraging people to drink,
right,
but like in case they violate our instructions.
And also in the registration trials, there were over 3,000 women, almost 4,000 women who got flibanserin, and there were episodes of hypotension syncope in 0.5% of women receiving flibanserin and 0.3% of people receiving placebo. And if you just look in the general population, not looking at taking any drug or anything else, the rates are higher than that even.
Okay.
And that may be because these were generally healthy premenopausal women, et cetera. And if you look with the antidepressants, the rates are higher than that. So in reality, I think it's an unwarranted concern, but we do have to do what the FDA says.
Absolutely.
At this point until more data are available.
But it shouldn't scare us from considering a medication because of the huge impact on the woman's quality of life and of the couple's quality of life.
Absolutely.
We're talking about a serious problem, a distressing problem.
Well, if you're comfortable prescribing something like buspirone or trazodone, then I don't know why you would be uncomfortable with this medication.
Right. I guess because of the FDA warnings.
Yes.
Okay, but these clarifications that you gave us are very helpful. I have just one more question about the alcohol. Is it not possible? So if a woman knows, like, okay, we are going to a party, you know, next weekend, can they not stop the medication like 1 or 2 days prior to that? Like in your clinical experience, do you allow that?
I've had patients say that they did that.
Okay.
Because they were trying to abide by the no alcohol and flibanserin rule. And so they said,
I
did that. Yes, and they did. Nobody, I haven't had a single patient who had hypotension syncope.
And you have been prescribing this medicine all along?
Yes.
You've not had a single patient who had hypotension or syncope?
No, but it seems to be a very rare event.
Yeah.
And it's not as bad as having a heart attack and dying like happened with men with Viagra.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I think that this is another part of the political issue. The paternalism and the level of concern about something having to be so safe for a quality of life issue for women, but not applying those same standards to men, seems to me to be institutionalized sexism.
Okay, yeah. The ADDI, I should add, has been called the female Viagra, or the pink Viagra. How do you feel about that? Is that term, like, do you resent that terminology, or is it like in a way women asserting themselves that no, we have a right to have a sex desire too?
I do think that this is a huge problem for women. If you look at the population, it's about 10% of all women, and that's across all age groups, have HSDD. So we definitely do need to talk to our patients about this and give them an opportunity to voice this complaint, because some people hold back because of taboos. But it's not really like Viagra in the context of you take it on demand or when you need it. There is a drug in development, bremelanotide, which acts on the melanocortin 4 receptors as an agonist. And what that does is it increases dopamine and norepinephrine activity in the system, which is excitatory for sexual functioning, including sexual desire. That you take right before you want to have sexual activity, 45 minutes an hour.
That would be similar to sildenafil or,
yes,
or tadalafil. But I guess, I believe it has to be administered subcutaneous injection,
yes,
which might be a little bit of a...
So I had thought that that might be a significant problem, and it probably is for some women, but there are lots of women, just like with premenstrual dysphoric disorder, who only want to take medicine when they're symptomatic, and then there are other women who are good with taking it all through their cycle. And some women would want to do this. I only want to use this when I'm symptomatic.
Yeah.
And now it's in an auto-injector form, like the way the EpiPen works. And so it's not, it's very, very simple.
It'll be easier.
You don't have to draw it up.
It'll be easier to administer. This is in development. This is not a medicine that has been approved by the FDA.
That's correct.
If it gets approved, you know, we don't know if it will. We don't know for sure. What is the time frame that would you be willing to venture a guess what year it might become available?
It depends on if the FDA does a quick review, like a 6-month review. I think the submission is going to go in 2018 before the middle of that year. So it's either going to be at the very end of 2018 it might get approval, or mid-year 2019.
So in the next clip, Dr. Clayton, I would like to ask you about some other possible treatments for sexual dysfunction in women that our readers seem to be uncertain about.